Welcome back to Tabletop Crowd. I'm your host, Kristen. It's been a while. So happy new year. This is our first Tabletop Crowd back in 2022. I'm here today with Cam Day, and we're going to be talking about his crowdfunding project, Robo Noir, Crime in Cog City, where you play as android investigators in the streets of an industrial art deco city. Cam, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this project. Before we jump into the project itself, can you introduce yourself to our listeners, tell them a little bit about who you are, and then talk to us about Robo Noir?
Sure. So, hey guys, as Kristen said, I am Cam. I own and run Daylight Publications, LLC, New Hampshire's only registered role-playing game company here in the state, which is pretty cool. I am a New Englander through and through. And, you know, with that comes all of the love of, you know, I'm not an avid hiker, but I do enjoy a nice hike now and then. And that, you know, love of nature and history and storytelling has kind of brought me to where I am now of owning my own role-playing game company. When I'm not designing stuff, I am a middle and high school history teacher here in Manchester, which is one of New Hampshire's biggest cities down here in Southern New Hampshire. So bringing a little bit of that mountain spice to the city, meaning steel toes and flannels in the classroom. And most of the kids are like, what are you wearing? I've been playing RPGs, mostly D&D for 12, 13 years since I was in middle school. And then eventually when I was in college, decided to try out the DM's Guild. And yeah, that's pretty much been the beginning of the end. Or the beginning of the new chapter. So
that's awesome. I love it. I like that you said, before we go back into games, I like that you said the hiking, because I'm in Oregon. And so, yes, I am, although I'm not from the state, I also enjoy hiking, and you kind of have to like the outdoors to be here. So I get that. And Daylight LLC is the only RPG company in New Hampshire. Is that what I heard?
Yep. The other big game company here in New Hampshire is Tabletop Tycoon. They're actually in Manchester. So games like, games by Starling Games, so stuff like Everdell, which is an awesome board game folks might have heard of, where you play as woodland creatures bringing stuff to your tree to store away. A couple other big games, but yeah, we're the only one. As far as I know, I have not seen anyone else. So
that is very cool. So currently you have a crowdfunding project on Indiegogo, Robo Noir. So can you tell me a little bit about this game?
Yeah. So it started when, my friend Alex Coggin, who has done art for a bunch of our other books, played in a bunch of my D&D games, reached out and was like, hey, you know, I know we had chatted originally about you trying out doing a zine sometime. Do you want to try doing it this month? Because with Kickstarter announcing they were going to start incorporating blockchain and crypto and potentially getting to NFTs, which is all a bunch of stupidness and makes no sense at all, because they're alienating like 90% of the people that use them. I was like, crap, now we got to look for somewhere new to try stuff out. And I had supported stuff on Indiegogo before, but I had never actually put anything on there. And I had considered doing Zine Month, which traditionally is February, as you said, but Kickstarter, who would usually host it during February, decided to move it to August for them to line up with Gen Con, which a lot of folks were kind of like, what? That seems like a little too much. Mm-hmm. So Alex was like, hey, do you want to try out doing this as kind of a test run? Because, you know, after our last two setting books, Supers and Sorcery and Comets and Cockpits, we've been working on our next one, Spellpunk, Solar and Sunder. And we were working on it. We had a lot of the writing together. And then the Kickstarter announcement happened. So we were like, where are we going to crowdfund it? Mm-hmm. And Alex is one of the main artists for that. And so she and I chatted, and I was like, hey, I've got this little game that I've been, that's been sitting around in my Google Docs. What if, and I figured, okay, we'll do this. We'll give it a test run. We'll do it during Zine Month for Zemo, and we'll see how it goes. And that'll kind of be sort of a toe in the water before jumping into, you know, potentially using it for Spellpunk. And so I had to go back and look at it. And, you know, growing up, I'm a very strange 23-year-old in that we grew up with tons of old movies at home. You know, Alfred Hitchcock, old Westerns, that kind of thing. But I have always loved detective stories, and I've always loved, you know, Casablanca, Maltese Falcon, Sherlock Holmes, anything noir, I was like, always for. And I was a big Bionicle kid growing up. Loved Bionicles. They were my favorite Lego. And when Bionicle ended, or at least the first generation of Bionicles, you had Hero Factory, you know, kind of these robots from Hero City. You know, they would go out on calls to different planets and fix stuff. And at first, you know, when I was younger, I was like, oh, it's just so stupid. It's so dumb. And my older, I was like, actually, it's pretty cool. And so I had this idea sort of from having conversations with a couple of different friends of mine of, you know, what if, you know, rather than fifth edition, you know, we try a different system. I was like, well, I'll try making my own. We'll see how that goes. And I've always loved D12s. 12 is my favorite number. And it is, in my opinion, the prettiest of die. It's so little love.
So and much controversy.
So, I know. I'm putting out chum in the water here.
Hot takes. Wow.
I know. But I also, the first RPG system I ever worked on, Black Void Games, Black Void, that goes through Modiphius and Black Void Games, was a D12 system. So that was something cool to work with. And so I was like, oh, I want to, you know, bring that in. And so Robo Noir, you know, kind of evolved. And then I talked to my friend, Laura Renfrew, who's my partner on the project, who does all the art. And like, without Laura's art, it would not look as good as it is. She, you know, I was chatting with her because she and I have worked together on a lot of stuff. And I was like, oh, I had this idea. And she goes, oh, I did a Columbo bot for Inktober a couple years ago. And she sent me a picture, and I was like, oh, let's do it. She was like, yeah. And so I had to start with the first robot I designed, because the idea is with Robo Noir is that you start with a template of there's several base robots who are based on detectives from pop culture, and you build around that detective. Each of them has a unique ability, unique gear, a unique amount of money. And I had to start with a detective who was an homage to Magnum PI. Mm-hmm. Because we grew up on Magnum PI. My mom and my aunt had this huge crush on Tom Selleck. He has aged very well.
Agreed.
If you all can't tell by the bi flag hanging behind me, although if this is video or audio. And we always grew up, we grew up watching Magnum all the time. So I was like, I have to make a Magnum robot. So we called him Stash in Leet speak, with a three for the E. And Laura just did this great piece of him. It's on the Indiegogo page. He's got a holographic floral shirt like Magnum would have, and his legs are patterned to look like tight jeans, because, you know, Tom Selleck would always have very tight, you know, those tight shorts. Yes. From the 80s
for tight, and the mustache
jeans. And the mustache.
Sorry, I was looking while you were talking on the Indiegogo page. That's amazing.
All good. And so I just kind of, you know, we've got bots in there who were inspired by RoboCop, mm-hmm. Portier, Miss Marple, of course, Simon & Simon, Enola Holmes, Nancy Drew, Cam Jansen, which is a deep lore cut, if anyone remembers the Cam Jansen chapter books for kids that we grew up on. And it was just really fun, because then I had to like start digging into like, who are some other detectives? And one of the perks you can get if you back it is you actually get to design your own detective. And that, you know, you can bring into So that's one of the fun perks is, and we're kind of going to do it like playbooks. Like we'll release the core book and then we'll release like a new wave of detectives that folks can play as, which is a fun way to sort of, and it's, you know, they're really easy to do. And there's an RPG that I have come to love very much called City of Mist, which I don't know if folks have out there have played it or not, but it's done by Son of Oak Studios and Modiphius. And it's this awesome crime noir, urban fantasy kind of feeling where you are in the city, which is kind of this living city that you can't go beyond the mist that surrounds the city. And you play as a rift where you have your mortal side and you have your fantastical side that comes through the mist. So like, you know, in example, I ran a game set in 1925 West Virginia in like a lumber town. And we had one of our friends who he was a detective, but his mythic half was Horus. So he could activate Horus's powers. And we had one who he was like a World War One vet, but his mythic side was a leprechaun because he was a wire runner who would go across no man's land. And so I wanted to pull from that game because it has like a really fun, first of all, it has a mechanic for a montage, which already is just like perfection. But it has a very narrative, very cinematic feel. And it's very loose, like it's very open to how people want to describe it. And I wanted to have that with what we call, came to call, and it's very cheesy, the daylight system, L-I-T-E. And yeah, it was just kind of like, it's an experiment. And it's just been really fun to be sort of start to get into the zine community. And it's at least something we're going to do more of. And it's just been really fun because usually, you know, I'll write these huge books and I'll have huge teams on it. But on this, it's just me and Laura, and yeah. I told myself I couldn't go over 30 pages. And I'm, you know, I'm designing it within the fact that, you know, we're doing a limited print run, so it's going to be a little 4x6 book that you can like fit in your pocket, or like in your wallet if your wallet's that big, or in your purse or your handbag or your clutch or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was also just a fun design challenge for me of like, okay, how do I make it all fit in this tiny book? Because I was like, if it's based off detectives, it should be the size of a pulp novel. Why not?
I like it. I like the additional challenge. Can you tell our listeners what a zine is? Because I don't think we've had a creator on here before who has a project for a zine. And so not everyone may know.
Yes. So zines got big sort of in the early days of the interwebs. And I'm still learning about it myself because this is our first one we've ever done.
Sure.
And it was pretty much a way to, you know, for artists and creators and writers to share media digitally, or through like very low cost black and white pulp print magazines or short stories, you know, printed on limited scale, kind of like it's almost kind of like a reflection of the pulp fiction era of like the 20s and 30s. In a way during, you know, during the Depression, where you have, you know, things like Conan and John Carter and all the Lovecraftian stuff coming out, you know, on these, you know, scraps of paper from the print mill that nobody wanted to use. And they like, you can only get them at certain places. And that's kind of what, where zines started and how it continued to grow and take off. I'm not 100% sure. But when I first, when I was used to do my podcast back in the day, when I was in college, you know, I started learning more about Zine Month and that kind of thing. And, it was sort of this whole, like whole new kind of vibe, this whole new kind of thing that I was like, oh, this is really, really cool. And I had written, you know, creatively for years and written stories and that kind of thing, but I'd never really thought of going into that. And then, you know, after knowing Alex for as long as I have and other folks, there's this whole new big push on, especially on Twitter, of like seeing, you know, lots of creators I follow getting more into doing zines and more of these like really light, really low layout stuff. I mean, like if you look at books, you know, one that comes to mind is Morkborg. Which a lot of folks are really big into, or stuff like Troika is another one that a lot of folks are getting into more of. Wanderholm, another one, which they're all very, very rules light and very, very broad, but they're not huge books. They're not like giant, thick old, chunky ones.
Right.
And so that kind of inspired me to do that, and also kind of inspired me to look into, you know, designing some more zines in the style of Robo Noir. So I got like four or five half-baked ideas locked away for like, I'll do a lumberpunk zine. I'll do a Swamp Thing herbalist inspired zine. I'll do one where you're a dragonflyer. I'll do one where you're a fisherman. I'll do one where you're hiking. And it's just, it's all these like little ideas that are sort of like, you know, I can, if I need a break from doing lesson plans or I need a break from playing a game, I can just pull it up, type down some quick ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have to have a lot of editing. It doesn't have to have a ton of play testing. It's just something quick, small, and fun, which is a nice sort of brain break in between stuff. And you don't have to make it super fancy. Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to worry too much about color comp. And if you got the RW whatever thingamahoozit that artists always ask me, like, does it match this composition? I'm like, guys, I'm sorry, I don't know. I just, this is what it looks like. Does this work?
Does this fit?
Does this fit? Will the colors clash? But yeah, it's been super fun, super relaxed, and plus doing something on such a small scale. I mean, the goal is only like $500, which is so much smaller compared to what we've done for our other projects.
Sure.
And it's kind of relaxing, you know, not having to worry about, oh my God, are we going to get like the thousands of dollars we need?
Right.
But, you know, just, you know, getting enough to pay for the art and pay for some printing and shipping and,
yeah,
you know, go from there. And the nice thing about Indiegogo is that it has a flexible funding option, which, you know, if you don't make your goal, you get to keep whatever you want, but Indiegogo takes a little bit of a higher cut, which mm-hmm. I think is, you know, honestly really helpful. And it also has the on-demand feature. So if you, you know, you can keep earning money as it goes up until when you deliver, you know, the book, and then you can always choose to relaunch it to do another limited run, which I think is something really cool. It kind of harkens back to, you know, the big days of literary magazines. And, you know, I would get, I remember when I was younger, we'd get Ranger Rick and like Lego Club magazine. And I get my Bionicle comics that I peel out of the Lego Club magazine and I threw them all away like an idiot when I was 10.
We all have that. We all have that thing.
Yes. And they were just, they were so cool looking back. I was like, why did I throw them away?
You didn't know. We all have that painful thing we got rid of that we wish we had kept.
But it's really been a blast. It has honestly been super fun. And, you know, a good a friend of mine, Sam Lay, did a little video on their TikTok the other night, you know, boosted us up a ton, which was really fun to see. Just be like, oh, because you get an alert every time someone contributes, which is kind of cool. I don't know. It feels kind of like back when I was a kid and I'd have to go around the town and like, you know, we'd have Yankee Candle sales at school. Some parents would be like, okay, I'm going to drop you off on this end of town. I'll meet you at this end of town when I'm doing groceries. Yeah. You go around and ask all the neighbors and I'll be like, okay, hey, you want a Yankee Candle? So yeah, it was just, it's been fun. It's been really fun. And I really hope, you know, we got some time left in the month. And I hope that, because we got two little stretch goals on it. For some little micro settings, because I'm starting to get more into doing micro settings, similar to sort of the challenge of the zine of, you know, pushing myself to work with limited space. So we'll see. If we don't, you know, we'll still just release them on drive through, but if we do, it'll be cool. So
yeah, that's great. Can you tell us about the settings, or is that something you're holding as a goal?
Oh no, they're on the page. They're on the page. So the first one is Espamena. And that came about because one day I was working on some stuff for Supers and Sorcery, I think. And I had put on the Zorro movie, the first Zorro movie with Antonio Banderas. And I'd watched it when I was younger, but I didn't remember much of it. And as usual, I got sucked back into the movie and completely forgot I was working on something. And so we were watching that. And of course, you know, the music plays into it and, you know, the acting's awesome. And then I remembered how little 10-year-old me had a massive crush on Catherine Zeta-Jones. And Fair. It was a whole remembrance. And I got finished watching that. And the idea that sort of came through my head was, what if there was a world where a way that you could rise through social class was by winning duels? Like, if there was an actual mechanic for that. And so I was playing around with it and I started writing it up, and it kind of evolved into, you know, this little sort of archipelago of islands that had been, you know, untouched for millennia. Mm-hmm. And this group, you know, of refugees sort of finally find a way through with these wizards called Waymren, who, you know, can control and speak with the weather. And I really worked in a lot of sort of my New Englander, you know, my dad's a forester, my mom's a soil scientist. My mom's dad ran a lumber business for, you know, almost 30 years, and they now own and operate a plant nursery. So, you know, the connection to our family, to nature, is very, very intense.
Yeah.
You know, our dad would be like, we'd walk into the hike woods, he'd be like, what type of tree is that? And we'd be like, it's a silver birch. He'd be like, close. And we'd, you know, he'd quiz us. And so I played around with that, and I was like, okay, I can't go too hard. You know, mm-hmm. I want to keep it under this page limit, because I was in the still that robo noir mindset of like, I want to keep it small.
Sure.
And so it evolved into, you know, I was like, okay, there's got to be enough opening lore to get it to have it like give it some life. There's got to be enough about sort of how the people or the government works to give it a base, and then sort of a fun, unique mechanic to it. Mm-hmm. And so I developed all the trade houses. So in the world of Espomena, there are 9 trade houses that over time they earn money, or there are ways for you to be elevated into it through a mercantile system. So I did all this research on like old school mercantile systems, and I was talking about economics with my students at the time. So it was like a little bleed through. And
it happens.
And so I built the trade house, which was fun. And I also was like, I want to have a lot of representation. So a lot of the trade house leaders are LGBTQIA, mm-hmm. or a lot of them have disabilities, which is super really fun to sort of create and build it as part of their character. So like one of the trade house leaders of the trade house, who sort of is all about marine biology and marine ecology, they were born without legs below their knees, mm-hmm. Which I knew some kids growing up who, you know, they were born without one leg or the other. And so they used their learning as part of the house to build their own prosthetics modeled after different marine life. And the artist, I have my friend Millie, who I met on Twitter. They did a commission of an OC of mine, who's like this old orc samurai turned grave domain cleric. So he's kind of like an old grumpy grandpa, mm-hmm. of an orc. And I was like, I have this idea. And she was like, oh my God, yes, I will do the art for it. And she sent me the sketches. I was just like, oh my God, it's so pretty. And then my friend Anna, who, you know, I invited into a game, one of my Eberron games, she read it and she's like, oh, what if Cam, to add to the, because I built the dueling system so you can win reputation through dueling with your performance skill, mm-hmm. or actually like winning combat, or you can earn infamy by bullying or by, you know, backstabbing.
Yeah.
And she's like, what if you could make a mechanic to propose to people with dueling? And I was like, do it, put it in the book. And she was like, okay, I will. So it just kind of blossomed into that. So yeah. That was Espomena. And then the other one on there is Morketh, World of 1,000 Isles, which that is like my OG homebrew setting for when I was like 10, I had been building and developing and growing and building and like putting aside for a little bit, coming back to, putting aside for a little bit, coming back to. Okay, come here. If you're going to chew on my wires, you're just going to get.
Oh, we have another special guest, listeners. It's Freya, the beautiful cat.
Yes, my little tortie. And so I, you know, we originally were going to do a big campaign for that, but then they kind of fell through. Mm-hmm. So we ended up doing, I would try doing a world anvil for a little bit. It wasn't getting as much love as I wanted to. So then I pulled it back. And we originally were going to do a monthly magazine of it on Drive-Thru. And I was like, but people aren't going to want to see, you know, they're not going to want to get the lore piecemeal. So I decided, hey, we'll turn this into a micro setting instead.
Sure.
And so That's the second one. And that's just started off a whole new little series that I've got a bunch of friends of mine working on. You know, we got one where it's kind of inspired by Horizon Zero Dawn, which is very fitting considering Horizon Forbidden West just came out. And we've got one where we were just, the original idea was undead living side by side with normal people in a neon city. And then we just started doing like a bunch of Fleetwood Mac puns. And so now it's like the top half of the city is like Flower Child paradise ruled by liches, potentially, who may or may not be modeled after Fleetwood Mac. And the underside of the city is where like it's all techno-y and stuff. We've got one where it's like there's an eternal, there's a blizzard, the giant blizzard that happens every, you know, 1,000 years. And it's done by a fantastical version of the Pokemon Frostmoth. And it just all these like little stupid ideas that I had that I'm like throwing at my friends, and they're like, we'll do it, we'll take it, let's make it happen. So it's just really fun to like work again in that. I'm like, no more than 10 pages, just enough lore to get people started.
Yep.
And like one or two unique mechanics. And I did a little poll on my Twitter page the other day to see what other systems folks want to start experimenting, because, you know, there have been some rumblings about Wizards potentially getting to NFTs. And I'm like, I don't want to make more Wizard stuff if that does happen. So looking more at Pathfinder and Powered by the Apocalypse. So a lot of folks were like, hey, we'd love to see some Powered by the Apocalypse settings. So I was like, I didn't realize a lot of folks were asking for that. So we're going to play around with doing that and some Pathfinder 2E stuff. And yeah, just kind of see where it goes. And
yeah, PBTA setting, PBTA is so popular, so that's not surprising. Seems like a really good system for you to go to if you are going to decide to move away from D&D for a while or forever. You know, that's a good system. It's always been really popular, you know, in indie gaming, but especially after Magpie did Avatar. Avatar obviously comes with this own enormous fan base, but now more folks are going to be aware of PBTA, which is very cool. So that's exciting. I'm glad to hear you'll be doing some of that in the future, possibly. Just a couple of questions. I know you mentioned a D12, which you are on record, Cam, for saying is the best die. I just want to remind folks.
Yes, and I will stand by that forever.
You will die on that hill.
Yes, and to the point that I am working on building my own version of a full, like, I was over at my fiance's, so she's Catholic, and so we had to go do a pre-cana.
Sure.
For all the Catholic folks out there, I'm not religious myself, so it was a little awkward at first, and then it actually turned out to be pretty good. While I was over there, you know, we were doing her family doesn't do Valentine's Day, they do fried chicken and zombie movie night. Only we didn't do the zombie movies, we just had fried chicken this year. And I was sitting there and I'm thinking, because I was checking on Robe Noir, and, you know, I had the daylight. And so I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know, it'd kind of be fun to try and build like a new system, because I've always touted that I'm never won much for mechanics, but I've slowly been finding myself enjoying it more and more. And I'm like, no, don't go to that side, Cam. Don't do it.
No, I'm just super impressed. I'm really impressed with people who can think more mechanically, or at least equal mechanics and story. I'm always like story, and my design partner is always mechanics, and I can do some, but I am not mechanic led in my design. And I'm so impressed by people who are. So,
We ran into that issue when we were doing Comets and Cockpits, which is our latest setting book, which is hopefully the first book will be coming out soon. Hopefully. Nice. It's a two-parter setting book, but the first book is set on this giant planet. And I loved, there was an MMO a couple years ago called Wildstar, which some folks may or may not remember. Rest in peace, Wildstar. You were taken from us too soon. But it was like super cartoony and stylized, and the lore was really cool, and the music was, it was just really fun. Yeah. And so that was kind of one of the big inspirations behind Comets and Cockpits. But we ran into the thing where I was like, I want a huge planet, like none of this Earth-sized planet stuff. Like, I want it to be massive. So we had the starting zone where like all the homesteaders and junkers are, and sort of where you start off is about the size of Russia, which I realized, okay, Russia is like 18 million square miles. Which is huge. And then I was like, okay, so that's a big chunk. Let's go bigger.
Let's do more.
Just insert that meme from Doctor Who of like, should we stay safe? Should we stay fed? No, you said, let's make it bigger. And so I was like, we're going to make the planet the size of Jupiter. And a couple of my friends who were working out were, they are scientists, like, Cam, the gravity. I was like, shh, no. We don't need to worry about the gravity. We don't need to worry about the physics. It's okay. It's okay. So that was one of those infamous moments where they're like, okay, whatever. Right? We'll go with it. So when I was thinking about the idea for, it is currently called the Day Heavy system. It is likely to change. When I was thinking about it, I was like, I do love D&D, but one of the things that always bugs me, especially because I'm running it right now as an enrichment with some of my kids at school, and I have, you know, 7th graders to 12th graders, and the older kids are definitely better with it, but the younger kids, there's still some stuff that they struggle with. And I was talking with a buddy of my friend Kai Linder, who, if you guys have not seen any of Kai's stuff, please go check him out. So I was chatting with him because he's in the UK, and he also has been doing an RPG stuff with his students. So he and I were kind of chatting about that and sort of like talking about some of the things where kids get stuck and kids get confused. And so the big things were class abilities and especially magic, which there is a reason when I get to play, I rarely play magic users, because it is really complicated. It really gets, you know, frustrating after a while. And so that got me thinking and sort of mulling it around. I came up with this idea of one of the things I love, 4th edition D&D is where I really got into it. The way they did that is sort of all the, rather than there being magic, the classes had spells, or the classes had powers, and the powers themselves were spells, kind of as a power. You had at will powers, encounter powers, and daily powers. So sort of instead of like action, bonus action, short rest, long rest kind of dealio.
Right.
And I was like, I really would like to bring some of that back, because they also were really good about like sort of clumping classes together. Like not physically sort of like we smush them and we make them a dish, but more of like putting them together based on kind of the theme. So like you have your martial classes, you have your divine classes, you have your primal classes. And so I was kind of doodling some, like, I was like, I need a piece of scrapbook paper. And now Natalie, my friend, she's like, we're making chicken right now. I was like, I need paper. I need paper and a pen. And so I just like wrote this all down super fast. And so it's still in development, but it's kind of like the idea of just condensing a lot of stuff, keeping a lot of stuff locked into certain places.
Yeah.
Making classes less complicated, making magic less complicated, and focusing a lot more on race and on background. Because I feel like if you are born a person, you should get way more benefits from being born a person, and sort of shifting again away from that sort of the whole bioessentialism issue that Wizards and D&D has had for a long time, which hopefully they switch more to the lineage system, which would be nice. And sort of thinking more about how does one's environment, one's family, one's, you know, culture influence them and affect them and change them, which again, I'm currently talking about cultural geography with my students. Nice. So more of that bleed through, even if I don't mean for it to happen. And yeah, just kind of focusing more on that. And I've always been a proponent of, you know, backgrounds do not get enough love in 5e, really, because there is so much more you could do with backgrounds rather than just here's some skills, here's some gear,
yeah,
and a feature. It's like, hello,
I know,
can do a little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more story, right? Instead of just, like you said, gear or stats. I love that. And that's one thing I love about, I mean, so many systems, not just PBTA, but like all the relationships and tie-ins you can do is really cool. You mentioned being able to play different types of characters in Robo Noir. Is it like a playbook, or is it like a character sheet and you can kind of design your own robo person?
So I would say it's more like a playbook, okay, probably, in that like you have, so everyone starts with base stats and you get to boost them, and then you add your detective stuff, and the detective is what boosts your stats to get your final scores for your guts. And I can't remember what
the other thing is right now, and I just literally looked at everything before the interview.
So it kind of, you start with like a very skeletal base and then you smack the detective on top of it.
Cool. Okay.
And the detective brings it to life. So like, for instance, Stash, because he's the one I remember the most, you know, his, oh, I'm trying to remember. I think I put his charm at 3. He gets a +3 to his charm.
Cool. I mean, the Stash plus... alone.
Yes. Yes. I forget the exact numberings, but like his ability, if you're ever doing a tail, during a case, you know, you'll get bonuses because you are driving a sports car, so it is faster, but you get negatives because you are in a red sports car. You don't really blend in to the average person's area. So that was kind of one of the things there.
I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. Or with like, Marple's robot, you know, she's obviously an older woman in the Agatha Christie stories. Mm-hmm. So she gets benefits when talking to older robots that younger bots might not have. Or another one was with Cam Jensen's robot, you know, she can perfectly remember a scene from a previous case that she can record and save for, you know, one that you guys might use, but it has to be within so many cases.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're more like playbooks. And now I gotta go and get like a copy of Dungeon World and Power of the Apocalypse, so that way I can read back through. Cause one of the only first systems I played other than D&D when I got to college was Dungeon World and was Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And getting to, it was so much fun. I think my guy was a slayer. So he was like a barbarian. His name was Thoth Dahoon, if I remember correctly. He had a giant mohawk and a giant serrated axe. And that's about all I remember. Because it was very...
Those are the important details.
Yes. So. Yes. Mohawk, saw, chisel, buzzsaw, axe. Yeah, those are the important things.
And cool name. So I don't think you don't have to remember anything else.
No, obviously not. I've been seeing a lot of my friends moving from D&D to Vampire, the Masquerade, because I think it's like its 20th anniversary or something, 20th or 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So I've been seeing lots of folks make the switch over. And I also have played Vampire, which was also very fun. I was a follower of Set. And they were like, what do you look like? I was like, I look like Riz Ahmed because he's hot. And that was about my answer. And they're like, okay, that checks.
Awesome. So your Robo Noir, which that's Crime in Cog City. That's pretty cool. I really like that. It's on Indiegogo until February 28th. Am I getting that correct?
Yep.
Perfect. And then afterwards, whether it hits its original goal or not, did I understand correct that you have an option to like keep it going or folks can continue to buy it? How does that work? Like, let's say someone listens to this. I was going to say on February 29th. Let's say someone listens to this on March 1st, but they obviously like the game because it sounds super cool. Mm-hmm. What can they do?
As far as I know, and again, I'm still learning and figuring things out.
Totally.
As far as I know, what'll happen, I think, is that it will like the chunk that we get, you know, that will lock and then that will get sent to us, I think. And then it'll be on demand. So it'll continue to earn a little bit. And then whatever I think we get in the on demand period will then get sent to us after we deliver whatever, you know, when the PDF comes out. Because the PDF is done. Like the PDF's done, all the core art's done.
Okay.
This is really to pay Laura because she did all this, you know, which was awesome. So to pay her. You know, put a little bit aside for me because I am a teacher. I don't make a lot of money. And to put out sort of the test print run because we're only doing 10 print copies.
Okay.
So kind of playing around with that and to pay really for shipping and stuff.
Of course.
So really playing around with that, figuring out how that whole side of things work. So really anything we would make and in demand, you know, we'd have to, you know, see what happens there and where it goes, really. Because again, this is our first time kind of figuring it out and playing around with it. So it'll just kind of be like a learn as we go kind of dealio.
Yeah, I like that. And I think that with there being more crowdfunding options like Indiegogo or Itch, I know there's some others, we're all going to kind of be learning about that. And so I appreciate you being like upfront and honest about it, because most of us that make games, or sorry, not most of us, a lot of us that make games, this is not our full-time job. This is a passion project. We have other jobs or we do other things. And this is, you know, so we're still learning about crowdfunding and about all this stuff. So really appreciate the honesty. I've heard good things about Indiegogo. So I'm excited to see how this plays out for you.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I always try to do is be open and honest about how stuff works, especially when, you know, we did Supers and Sorcery, which was our first book. And, you know, that only, you know, we raised $12,000 for it over the course of a month, which was, you know, it was super cool. It was really awesome.
Yeah.
But we had, there was a lot of folks who, you know, got frustrated. We still delivered the book on time, but then they got frustrated because we did it, you know, as a POD code through a drive-through rather than just mailing them the book directly and printing ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I was like, listen, guys, you got to understand, we do not have a giant printing house. We do not have the budget to print off, you know, oodles and oodles of copies and get them shipped to our house. That's why tools like drive-through is there. And that's why they've built drive-through RPG to be able to do the print on demand to fund it through. So I'm sorry that you don't like paying, you know, $20 here and then another $20 or $30 here. That's how we do it. And especially when, you know, so we did Comets and Cockpits, which blew Supers and Sorcery out of the water. We had, you know, almost three times as many followers and backers, earned almost three times more. And the thing we ran into there is that we have two really big books. And, you know, book one, Geographica Delphos, is clocking in at almost 300 pages. Mm-hmm. So, and I, and when, you know, starting this year, actually last year, starting last year, January, Lightning Source and One Bookshelf had to up their printing and shipping costs because of, obviously, with the pandemic, paper and ink are two, and cardboard are two of the big things that have been in short supply and short demand. And I was like, hey guys, and I pretty much sat down and gave an economics lesson in one of our Kickstarter updates of like, this is what's happening, guys. Like, and a lot of folks, I think, really appreciated it. I think they really were kind of, well, you know, thanks for telling us, thanks for keeping us informed. Cause, you know, I've had Kickstarters that have gone like months without updates, and then it all of a sudden shows up like 4 or 5 months late with no telling at all. Or I have friends who backed a Kickstarter like 5 years ago and still haven't gotten it.
Yeah.
That happens. Those big, but that's one of the big things. And that's one of the fun things about getting to try out doing stuff on it on Indiegogo, and maybe even we'll try out stuff on Itch, is being able to share sort of what the journey is and what we're learning along the way. So.
Absolutely. And I have not crowdfunded on Itch myself yet, but I have a friend who did, and it was a good experience. I know we are almost at time. I'm super excited about Robo Noir, Crime in Cog City. Is there anything else you want to tell us about or tell our listeners about the project itself before we wrap, or any other projects you have coming up that you might want to tell folks about?
The only other thing that I would want to let folks know about is if you are someone who might be listening, or you know someone who, you know, might be interested in getting into DMing, or might want to like try it out, or is nervous or anxious, doesn't really know how to start. Over last summer, before I went on vacation with my fiance, I released a book called You Arrive at a Tavern, which is a beginner's guide to how to start and build and craft campaigns. It has outlines on how to outline your campaign, whether it's, as I sort of put it into movie or TV categories, like, is it a mini series? Is it a made for TV show? Is it a made for TV movie? Is it a, you know, anthology series? How to sort of the different breakdowns of what kind of NPCs there are, sort of how to build NPCs, NPC trackers, campaign trackers. And I really just built it because one of the things I loved about fourth edition is their Dungeon Master's guides were amazing and were super great tools. I gave my 5e Dungeon Master's guide away because I was like, I don't even use this thing.
Yeah.
And the 4e one was just an amazing tool to help me become a better storyteller. not just for role-playing games, but just writing in general and understanding how stories work better.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take a lot of that and put it into that. And it did really well. And then the D&D Twitter retweeted it over the summer, which I was kind of like, I was a little bit of brain dribbling out the ear because I was like, how did this happen? But I really, that I think is probably one of my favorite things I've made. I did it all by myself. Got some stuff from, you know, Adobe, some stock art that I just threw in there. And it was really just a passion project. So I really like pushing that for folks to use as a tool. And, you know, if you are anxious and you don't know where to start, you know, I was there too myself 12 years ago when a family friend gave me a box full of a hodgepodge of 1E, 2E, 3.5, 4E stuff. And I was like, here you go. So that tool is there. And I always like to tell folks about it. And once we start getting some of our micro settings out, that'll be a perfect couple because you'll have your little mini Dungeon Master's Guide and a little mini setting. And then you have a good start that isn't too overwhelming, because I can definitely understand that lots of setting books. I love big setting books. I never will not, but they're intimidating. And I 100% understand that, especially working in a school where we do not have a lot of very good readers, and the bigger the book, the more intimidating it is.
Yeah.
So I totally understand.
Yeah. It's called, so you walk into a tavern.
So it's called You Arrive at a Tavern.
Beginner's
Guide to Crafting and Creating Campaigns. So.
And where can folks find it?
They can find that over on DM's Guild. It is currently an Electrum seller. So it's got over 150 sales.
Nice.
And folks are loving it, folks are enjoying it, and I hope that, you know, I am able to give more folks a little bit of guidance with that. That's the teacher in me always wanting to help.
No, that's great. I love it so much. And Cam, do you want to be found on the internets, on Twitter? Do you want to plug that, or would you prefer to remain anonymous?
So you guys can find me on Twitter. That's where I do most of my posting. At Daylight Pub 1066, all lowercase. I probably post way more than I should. I retweet lots of art. So I'm also fancy myself a bit of an art director, art agent. I'm like, I have tons of my friends who are like, I'm a tweet of your art all the time. So at Daylight Pub 1066, you know, I'm more than open to chat with folks, but yeah, that's where most folks can find me, either retweeting art or sharing my stuff or sharing lots of pictures of my cat in between the RPG adorable stuff.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Cam. And folks, again, Robo Noir Crime and Cog City is up on Indiegogo. You can check our show notes for the link, not only to Cam's Twitter, but also to Robo Noir. So go check it out, tell a friend, and thanks again for joining us.
Sometimes, winning a game isn't about dealing the most damage, or drawing the most cards, or making any measurable contribution towards victory. But hey, just because you don't have the stats doesn't mean you're not a f***ing gamer god, alright? Enter The Intangibles, a podcast on the Geekspective Network, where me, Kenny, and my brother Matt break down all the things that are hard to quantify in games. All kinds of games. We're talking classics like Sonic the Hedgehogs, and chess, and 3D Pinball Space Cadet. Great game, by the way. We're talking new releases like
insert latest trending games on Twitch here,
single player, co-op, competitive, card games, board games, role-playing games, play-by-mail games, the wakes. We do deep dives into our favorite games, digging into the intangibles that make them great and the intangibles that will make you a better player, and hey, maybe even a better person. Check out The Intangibles on whatever the heck platform you're listening to right now.